Now Monitor brings you Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence C. Spivak. Four of America's top news reporters are ready for this spontaneous, unrehearsed news conference. Here's the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. Our guest today is Senator J.W. Fulbright, Democrat of Arkansas. As the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, he is presiding over the inquiry now in progress into the U-2 spy plane incident and the subsequent collapse of the summit conference with the Soviet Union. The committee is making public a censored transcript of the testimony. Senator Fulbright has said that the public must understand the government's policies if these policies are to be supported. During his 18 years in Congress, Senator Fulbright has devoted much of his attention to foreign policy matters. He recently returned from a visit to the Middle East. Senator Fulbright began his career as an educator. At the age of 34, he was elected president of the University of Arkansas. And now seated around the press table, ready to interview Senator Fulbright, are Stuart Hensley of United Press International, Chalmers Roberts of the Washington Post, Russell Baker of the New York Times, and Frank Burkholzer of NBC News. Lawrence E. Spivak, our regular member of the Meet the Press panel, will be back with us next week. Now, Senator Fulbright, if you're ready, sir, we'll start the questions with Mr. Burkholzer.
Senator Fulbright, Moscow radio today is saying that although Secretary Herter tried to blame Russia for the failure of the summit conference, your committee, and to quote Moscow radio, has torn off the mask of innocence behind which the U.S. government is vainly trying to hide its responsibility. Would you like to answer Moscow radio, Senator?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that Mr. Khrushchev used this incident to sabotage and to destroy the summit conference. I also think, however, that the U-2 incident gave him an opportunity to do that, and it, in a sense, he hid his intransigence behind that incident. But I think he vastly exaggerated its significance, and I think that's an erroneous conclusion to draw from.
Senator, I'd also like to ask, is your committee investigation proceeding on the assumption that there were bad decisions by the administration in the weeks preceding the summit, or are you trying to find out whether the decisions were good or bad?
Well, I think the latter. We're trying to find out what happened, and after we find out what happened, we'll try to draw correct conclusions from it.
Senator, in the opening day of your hearings, your line of questioning indicated that you felt the chief of state should not be responsible or held responsible for espionage activities. Did you mean by that you thought the president should be kept in ignorance of such things as the U-2 program?
Well, I tried to make it plain, Mr. Burkholzer, that this is a departure from the historical and traditional practice. And throughout history, no chief of state has assumed responsibility for espionage. Espionage activities, per se, I think, are inherently illegal, and one could say immoral from the normal standards that we judge individual conduct, certainly, and the ordinary conduct of countries. And I think there's a good reason. I'm not ready to say that they're completely wrong in this. Maybe the world has changed to where there is need for a change in this policy. But at the moment, in the absence of any very persuasive reason, I'm very doubtful about the wisdom of the president, any chief of state, or particularly our president, assuming personal responsibility for all the espionage activities that are engaged in by the country.
Mr. Baker, Senator, on the basis of what your inquiry has turned up so far, do you agree with Adlai Stevenson's statement that the administration gave Moscow the sledgehammer and the crowbar to wreck the summit conference?
I dislike being asked to adopt the statements of private individuals who have every right to express their views on these matters. I think that And I wouldn't wish to criticize him. I don't think in my position that I would like at this time to say anything of that nature. I do think, as of now, that certainly the incident that took place certainly gave a good excuse, an excuse which he took full advantage of to erect the conference. The secretary doesn't deny that. You'll notice in the hearing that this was one of the reasons. He gives other reasons. He believes that other reasons have contributed to the determination by Mr. Khrushchev to wreck it. But he also admits that the U-2 incident contributed to that decision to wreck it.
Could we focus down for a minute, Senator, on some of the details of these hearings? I'm particularly interested in the decision to let these flights go on so close to the summit conference. And here the testimony is confusing. Mr. Herter says, for example, that the decision to continue them was a sound decision. But later, under questioning, he says he knows of no conference that was ever held where such a decision was discussed. From what you've heard, how much conversation was there within the administration on this question? Was it ever really thought through at the top of the administration?
As of now, although these conclusions must be tentative because we have other witnesses and there may be other evidence that I don't know about, but as of judging from Mr. Herter's testimony, I would say there was no conference preceding this, preceding the May 5th flight. That specifically authorized it. This took place as a part of a program of general authorization that had been going on for a long time. And I think when pressed, Mr. Herter said that there was no decision to continue, there was no affirmative decision.
But do you assume from that this was a slip, that it was something that nobody ever thought about?
I think the latter, that I don't think anyone thought about the nearness to the conference, nearness to the summit. Of course, there is the thought that has been advanced that this being May Day and a very special festive day in the Soviet Union, that they might be planning to do something dramatic and that perhaps it'd be a good day to do it. On the other hand, it was all the more offensive from the point of view of the Soviets.
On the other hand, there have been reports that a decision was made somewhere in the administration to stop these flights after the May 1st flight. Have you heard of that?
I asked about that. If you remember the very first questions I asked, had there been any decision for a moratorium at any time? And he said no.
Mr. Roberts.
Senator, looking at all the testimony you heard over 6 hours the other day, is it clear in your mind during the period from May 1st when the plane was down, when this government first knew it was missing, until the story was finally clarified about the espionage, is it clear in your mind who was running the store in Washington?
Well, it is very difficult. Obviously, the NASA statement is a good example, had not been cleared with the Department of State. And you had, and Mr. White was not aware, apparently, according to the testimony, of the true facts, so that there was a lack of coordination. And you had really four agencies, the Air Force, NASA, the State Department, and defense.
What about the president?
Well, the president was consulted, by telephone with regard to the statement on Saturday, the one which finally confessed all. But I would think it was unfortunate, at least, that there wasn't very close discussion of these matters among all involved. I think it's quite clear that there was a lack of coordination among these various agencies that were making statements about this matter.
Well, do you have any view, Senator, as to whose job it properly was to see that there was coordination in the executive branch of the government?
Well, of course, head of state is the one who is primarily responsible for the coordination of all of the agencies of the government. Under him, I think the State Department should have authority to do this and the responsibility. I'm inclined to think that they have not been given sufficient authority in the sense that the other agencies haven't been impressed with the necessity of clearing all such statements with the department.
Well, do you find fault or not with the president's role as head of the government in this affair?
Well, now, Mr. Roberts, as you know, I am trying to keep the partisan politics out of this hearing because my objective is to develop what actually happened. And if the facts would support such a conclusion, that should be a conclusion drawn after all the facts are in. I do not think it's proper for me to make such a statement at this time because I'm confident that members of the other party would think I was injecting a partisan note into this whole inquiry. We're just beginning. We've had only one witness. And one of the terrible things I think that might happen to our country is that this kind of an issue, particularly as indicated in the debate last Monday, that one or the other party is soft on communism, this would be a tragic thing in an election year if this should develop. And I don't want to be any party to contributing to that. I hope we can develop the facts in such a way that they're true, and then that you and others in your position and all of us can then draw the conclusion as to whether or not the government was being affirmatively and positively directed.
Mr. Hensley.
Senator Fulbright, I realize you're trying to keep your inquiry non-political and impartial, and aside from the question of who is soft or not on communism, could you step aside from your committee role a moment and just say how big a factor you think this whole thing, the U-2 incident and the summit collapse, is going to be in the political campaign this year?
Well, that's very difficult. I would say that the efficiency and of the administration of our government, the procedures and the directness and affirmative management of our governmental affairs is certainly an issue in any campaign, and it will be an issue. This may be an incident in that overall problem of whether or not we have had as effective a government as we ought to have.
Well, Senator, with respect to the president's role in this affair, in the handling of the U-2, he disclosed that he had made his decision, I believe it was on Thursday, May 12th, to suspend these U-2 flights. He did not tell Premier Khrushchev about these until they met Monday under somewhat strained circumstances. Mr. Khrushchev has also complained in his speech in Moscow yesterday, I believe, that the president made no effort to get in touch with him ahead of time in Paris and to try to explain this thing. Do you believe that if the president had acted differently under the circumstances, the summit might have been salvaged to some extent?
It probably was late at that time, but I did ask why that was delayed, and the answer was not particularly convincing. I didn't see a very good reason why it was delayed until after Khrushchev had made his speech on that Monday. The Secretary of State says that his statement and the President's was not reasonably interpreted to mean that these flights would continue. All I can say is that everyone I know, including myself, had interpreted to the opposite, that it did mean they were continued. So that it's possible that this belief was a factor in causing the Chairman Khrushchev to be so hard and completely unyielding. No one knows. That's a speculative.
Well, Senator, there's one other point in this thing I'd like to ask you about. I think you seem to be trying to get at this in your questioning the other day, and I don't know whether you ever got it. President Eisenhower, in his statement or his speech last Wednesday, said with regard to the timing of the U-2 flights that they were carried on right along as we approached the summit, because if they had been given up, it would have meant that we had to forego the gathering of important information that was essential and that was unlikely to be available at a later date. Now, have you been able to determine what this information was, and if so, do you think it was important enough to have continued these flights?
We were not able to determine what that was. It was asked, but that was considered improper for the secretary, at least, to answer. And we do not know what that was.
Senator, in the testimony before your committee, there has been at least a suggestion that some other U-2 planes may have had some kind of misfortunes. Is there anything you can tell us about that?
There have been some loss, but not over Russia. I mean, they've been lost in the ordinary kinds of accidents. They've crashed and so on. No other have been lost over Russia.
Mr. Burkholz.
Senator, you mentioned a while ago the moment when our policymakers decided to confess all. That was on Saturday, the 7th of May, I believe. A lot of people think that the basic difficulty in the whole U-2 incident traces back to that decision to be honest, so to speak, and admit that there had been a spy flight, and substantially as the Soviets had charged. In your investigation, including some parts that we haven't seen the transcript of, have you been able to determine whose idea this was in the original instance?
That final decision, best of my knowledge, was as a result of consultation with the president, who at that time was in Gettysburg, and the Secretary of State and the Undersecretary. I think at that date, everyone who should have been consulted was consulted. And the president did approve of that.
But you haven't uncovered who suggested the honesty policy in the first.
Well, I think the Secretary of State takes responsibility for suggesting it, but the president approved it, and it had his full approval. This is, I think, a very key decision in this whole matter. I think the idea of espionage to all Americans is distasteful. The president has said in his speeches and his press conferences that it's a very distasteful, nasty business, and I agree. But for that very reason, we treat it differently in the Congress from any other activity. I don't know about the CIA and about it. None of us do, except a very small number, and we treat it differently in other ways. In other words, I don't take responsibility as a senator for this espionage, and I wonder why should the president? I mean, this is a very unusual and different operation from any other governmental operation. This is the question that I said a moment ago. I wonder about the wisdom of it.
Senator, the Security Council of the United Nations the other day passed a resolution to which this country gave its affirmative vote. And among other things, the Council appealed to all members to respect each other's sovereignty, territorial integrity, and political independence. Would you feel that having gone along with this resolution, that this country is now at least morally bound not to have any kind of overflights in the future?
This again presents this same dilemma. All nations have engaged in espionage, but no head of state has ever admitted that he did, nor taken responsibility for it. We do subscribe to that in principle, and yet at the same time, I'm not willing to say we should forego, under the kind of the world we live in, all espionage. It'd be a very foolish thing to do. So this is still another aspect of this very same problem.
Mr. Baker.
Well, Senator, the only alternative to the president's assuming responsibility would have been to make Alan Dulles, as head of the CIA, the scapegoat. Would this have been your way out?
Well, I don't know. There might be various ways out. He might have alleged that it was stolen by the Russians. They usually say when a defector comes over that we bribed them or seduced them in some capitalistic way. I mean, this is the normal means of espionage activities. I think one could, if you had the time, imagine several different alternatives. But even if it involved Mr. Alan Dulles, So what? That doesn't involve the whole United States and involve us in the kind of difficulties we now find ourselves.
But all of those other alternatives involve the implication that the president didn't know what was going on within his own administration on a rather grave matter.
Well?
Well, would
that's
this...
not a question, is it? That's a statement.
Isn't this a risk that he couldn't have taken under any circumstances in an election year?
I don't think so.
You're setting up a trap for him to walk into?
I don't think so. I don't think the president's expected to know every single flight. I mean, obviously, he wouldn't keep up with every single activity of every branch of the government. I don't think that's quite the way to look at it.
Mr. Roberts, I'll try and get back to you.
Senator, let's look forward a moment now. After the collapse, as a result of the collapse of the summit, what effect do you see this having on our relations with the Soviet Union?
Well,
are we going to be in a period of Cold War and no more summit meetings, or what?
Well, I don't see any summit meetings in the offing, and I think it is unfortunate that... Our relations will undoubtedly be strained, more so than usual. But I notice that Chairman Khrushchev's recent statements have been, I thought, rather unexpectedly mild and moderate. The ones he made in East Germany and his comment in the famous press conference didn't finally just break all ties. His manner was more offensive in many respects than actually the words. So I don't believe he wishes to break all ties, and I think some form of communication is very important to retain with him. This is another reason why I think keeping this out of the campaign insofar as possible, that is, the merits of this policy, is important, because if you don't, both parties may find themselves in a frozen position relative to the Soviet Union.
How do you account for the fact that Khrushchev seems to be mostly indulging in propaganda rather than in a change of policy, if I understand your view of it?
Well, I think he realizes the seriousness of really breaking relations, which is a step toward eventual war. I don't believe he contemplates an all-out nuclear war with any degree of satisfaction at all, and I don't think that's in his mind.
Mr. Hensley.
Senator Fulbright, one of your colleagues, Senator Mansfield, said that the failure of the summit conference shows that the United States must go back to relying on old-fashioned diplomacy more than it has been during this past year of personal diplomacy. He suggests that summit conferences should be attended only to ratify agreements which have already been made at lower levels. Do you agree with that, and what in general is your opinion of this personal diplomacy that led up to this?
I do agree with that in general. I think that the personal diplomacy was given a great boost by the late Secretary Dulles, as you know, and it probably has a place. This was an experiment. We were reluctant about it, as you know, and I think it's very doubtful that heads of state should come together to negotiate. They should come together only to ratify what has been agreed upon. I think that as a general principle, that's a sound procedure.
I just have one other question, Senator. The transcript of your hearings is being censored, of course, not by you or the committee, as I understand it, but by the State Department and the CIA.
That's correct.
Have you noticed any deletions which might be for the purpose of saving the administration embarrassment rather than straightforward security deletions?
I haven't had a chance to go over all the deletions. Only two were brought to me for comment. The two that were in question, I do not believe involved that. I think they were sound deletions, but I have not had a chance to check all of them. I had 2 weeks' accumulation of work in my office yesterday, and I just couldn't spend it reading the record.
Mr. Baker.
Senator, does your
criticism of personal diplomacy extend to these goodwill trips that the president has been making?
No, I think they're really a little different. They are goodwill trips. I have no objection to goodwill trips.
Thinking,
they don't undertake to do anything serious in the way of negotiation.
I'm thinking now of the Japanese trip that's coming up. We're worried about the damage to the prestige of the presidency done by what happened in Paris. Do you think there's a similar risk in the president's going to Japan at this time,
well,
with the unrest there?
Unless he can be received properly, there is. But I spoke at dinner the other night with former Prime Minister Yoshida. He thinks that the reports have been vastly exaggerated. I don't really know how serious the riots are. But he shouldn't go if those conditions are bad and he won't get a proper reception. But I don't disapprove of his goodwill trips. I think they have done some good.
Mr. Burkholzer.
Senator Fulbright, your next witness next week will be CIA Director Alan Dulles. What is the main point that you want to get from him in his testimony?
Well, he is the man of best, I suppose, qualified to tell us about this whole program than anyone else in the government. It will be a review, and the points that have been already raised here about moratoriums, there was any thought given to stopping the flights and so on, the actual operation of the...
Senator, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I see that our time is up.
Monitor's thanks to Senator J. William Fulbright, Democrat of Arkansas, and the members of the Meet the Press panel for an enlightening half hour. The panelists were Stuart Hensley of UPI, Chalmers Roberts of the Washington Post, Russell Baker of the New York Times, and Frank Burkholzer of NBC News. Meet the Press, produced by Lawrence C. Spivak. Now a personal word, if I may, on this long weekend of the Memorial Day holiday. Remember, a man cannot outrun his shadow, but a driver can outrace his headlights. When your lights reveal danger ahead, you should be able to stop your car before a collision takes place. But when you're traveling at a high rate of speed, you might need more distance to stop in than your headlights reveal. Then if you suddenly spot a serious hazard and jam on your brakes, it does no good. Your car will continue to move forward toward an inescapable smash. Night speeding can result in your first and your last traffic accident. This weekend particularly, remember, holiday accidents take a costly toll across the nation. The tragedy on top of tragedy is that these accidents could have been avoided. Check your own driving right now. The National Safety Council urges you to be patient. Take time to be careful. Be alert for careless drivers. Share the road and share your holiday pleasure safely. Monitor just can't afford to lose even one listener this weekend. With that, I see that once again, for this week, my monitor time has run out. News follows in a moment. Parts of the preceding hour were pre-recorded.